when the ice retreats in the summer, as the ice shrinks back, you suddenly are revealing an open ocean in the Arctic, which has lots of waves on it. And the waves can then act on the ice and break the ice up and cause it to retreat faster. So there's this wave effect that never used to be there because there was never enough open water to allow waves to form. And then another thing is that as the ice retreats, it's melting on the surface, and that's making the surface darker. And that reduces the amount of radiation that's reflected, and it absorbs more radiation and melts away quicker.
So just to understand that point, you're saying that as the ice in the Arctic continues to melt, it becomes darker. Then, as it becomes darker, it absorbs the sun's rays instead of reflecting them. And that, in fact, this whole process is actually speeding up global warming.
Yes, that's correct. In fact, the ocean around in that open water area is warming up quite a lot. The satellite data showing it's warming up to about 7 degrees, which is, for the Arctic, that's tropical, a bit like the North Sea in England. That warmer water acts to melt the ice more rapidly.
Professor, you're projecting that the final collapse of Arctic summer sea ice will occur within 4 years. Could you explain this process a little bit for us, please?
There's a wild card a lot of people are worried about, which is the release of methane. A big part of the Arctic Ocean is very shallow. About a third of the area of the Arctic is only 50 to 100 metres deep, continental shelves, especially off Siberia. And that shallow water can warm much more rapidly than the Arctic Ocean as a whole if the sea ice retreats. What's happening now is the sea ice comes off those shelves in the summer, that the water on the shelves warms up, and that warms the seabed. And the seabed is made of frozen sediment, permafrost, which is like the permafrost on land but extending out to sea. And if that permafrost melts, which it seems to be doing, then what it will release is a lot of methane, which is trapped under the permafrost, and expeditions are seeing these big methane plumes coming out. Methane levels in the atmosphere are rising, and methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas. So if all the methane that's trapped in offshore permafrost comes off in a short time, that will give a huge kick to global warming. It will really accelerate it.
How much will this speed up the process of global warming or global climate change?
There isn't a good model because opinions differ on how fast the methane is going to be released. If a really big boost of methane, all of it released at once, might double the rate of warming. And when we look a century ahead, it could take that 4 degrees up by 5 or 6 degrees. That's a massive amount. It's enough to seriously upset crop production. There will be a real food crisis coming along because it will make it more difficult to grow crops.
So, when are we likely to actually see this global food crisis begin to unfold?
It could happen quite quickly. There's some evidence it's even happening now. This year, there was a real shortage in food production in many countries, including the US. That was ascribed to weather, but supposing the weather is actually related to the climate, and for instance, the unusually bad weather in the US and in Europe this year has been related to a change in the position of the jet stream, which separates the polar air from the lower latitude air.
Okay, well, what do these changes in weather patterns and warmer temperatures in the northern hemisphere actually mean for us on the rest of the planet?
It's more than the amount of warming than we've had since the middle of the last ice age. It means things like really accelerated rise in sea level. We might see much more than a meter of sea level rise. And that will produce big increases in flooding, storm surges. We'll be seeing ice sheets vanishing. Associated with that warming, there's a big reduction in rainfall in low latitudes. So places like sub-Saharan Africa, the Far East, the Amazon rainforest are all going to become drier, and they'll lose a lot of their potential for subsistence, while the breadbasket parts of the world, like the US and Europe, will suffer because the summers will become much hotter, and that's enough to really have a bad effect on survival of crops.
Like we saw a reduction in the corn production in the US this year.
Yes, that's a sign of what might become normal. The trouble is, if population keeps on rising rapidly, there'll become a collision between population and food supply, which could result in really serious famine. I feel that life on Earth is going to get significantly more unpleasant by about 2030.
That's less than 20 years from now.
Yes, it's really just one generation. I think we're seeing the best of life in our planet now.
Okay, so what can we do about all this?
We have to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, but we have to maintain a technological civilization, really, just in order to keep people alive, because our agriculture is a form of technology. We need huge amounts of energy inputs for pesticides, fertilizers, transport of crops. It's down to things like nuclear, because of a technological civilization that you have to have, and the only thing that can do that is nuclear. I would really go for a crash course in building thorium power stations and some kind of very serious and rapid research into ways of either taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere or geoengineering solutions that will give us some more time by cutting off some of the solar radiation by putting aerosols into the atmosphere.
Well, damn, Will. Well, with that, the solution actually sounds as bad as the problem. I mean, wouldn't we be just turning the entire planet into a giant laboratory experiment?
But the trouble is, we're already doing a giant experiment on our planet, and we're already intervening. When you have a power station that's emitting huge amounts of carbon dioxide, that carbon dioxide is going worldwide and affecting the climate of the whole planet. So we're already in the middle of a global climate experiment, which is out of control. We only have one planet, and we're doing this to it. We've already gone far beyond anything that nature has done. If you look at the difference, for instance, between the depths of an ice age and a warm period, a million years, the difference in CO2 levels was about 100 parts per million, from 180 to 280, and we've gone now to over 400. So we've already doubled the extra CO2 that we have in a warm period compared to an ice age in the last 150 years, which is an incredibly short but enormously massive blip of greenhouse gas that we've injected into our own atmosphere without knowing that this had consequences. And now we have to live with the consequences and somehow try to cope with something that we've done without knowing what we were doing. So it is a very frightening thing that we may have really messed up our only home in the universe.